Daisy.
And I'm Terry.
And this is the Monday Mindset Podcast,
where we talk about things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 35.
This week, it's Daisy's turn to share something with us. So Daisy, what do you have?
Well, Terry, I'm back for the second part of The Kaizen Way, One Small Step Can Change Your Life by Robert Mora. And this time we get a bit more into the nitty gritty of what he talks about what Kaizen is and why it works. And I've got quite a few pages of notes, so I'm going to just dive straight in. If people want to hear more about where it comes from, I need to go back and listen to last week's episode. So why does Kaizen, which he describes as taking these little comfortable steps to work towards a goal that you're wanting to achieve, why does it work? He says, all changes, even positive ones, are scary. Attempts to reach goals through radical or revolutionary means often fail because they heighten fear. But the small steps of Kaizen disarm the brain's fear response, stimulating rational thought and creative play. And he goes into talking about, in quite a lot of detail, which I'm not going to do, the three parts of our brain. And he talks about Kaizen as kind of this sort of stealth approach that bypasses the fear flight response. And he talks about the brainstem, the reptilian brain, which is responsible for all our automatic functions, things we don't think about, like breathing. But the two parts that he really talks about in some detail are the midbrain, the mammalian brain, that controls our body temperature, our emotions, and the amygdala with the fear flight response. And this is the bit that's important, because what he wants to do is bypass that and get directly to the cortex, where rational thought and creativity take place. So the whole point of Kaizen, of these small steps, is to sneak around the amygdala in a bit of a stealth maneuver and not trigger this fear, flight, freeze response. But also in doing so, you gradually build, and we've spoken about this, and I know it's one of your pet subjects, is building these new neural pathways. So it's like a double-edged sword, really, avoiding that problematic response, but at the same time, slowly building these pathways that are going to set these new habits that we want to create into place for the future. So how do we do this? He gives examples in different areas of different Kaizen steps, small steps in various areas. And the first one, and I'm going to go through these quite quickly, they're basically the different chapters in the book. And as I said before, I do recommend reading in more detail. It's not a long book, and it's a very interesting read. But the first one is to ask small questions. Can you think of a very small step you might take to improve? Insert the thing to improve or the thing you want to change. The point with this is that our brains love questions. They'll immediately start looking for answers when you ask them a question. But you have to ask them questions to set that ball rolling, if you like. And the other important thing is to keep asking. So repetition. Keep asking a small question and your brain will basically be forced to start paying attention to the problem that you're trying to solve. And this repetition is key. Think, for example, of the gratitude journal and how I spoke before about that way back in our first episode. Just a few little questions that I ask myself every day actually set my brain down a different track. It started looking for things. It started looking for answers. And there's a really nice quote in the book from somebody called Sam Keen. What shapes our lives are the questions we ask, refuse to ask, or never think to ask. So really important. But don't wake the amygdala. You need to tiptoe past with these small questions and basically allow your brain to do its job. how often, for example, have answers come to you or great ideas when you're doing something relaxing or not overthinking? Like for me personally, I often maybe talk things over or come up with ideas in my mind when I'm relaxing, taking the dogs for a walk. Things come to me when you've set your brain, you've asked it some questions, but then you just allow it to do its work without stressing it out. And that's the idea here. Don't trigger that stress response and just let it do its job. Small questions and repetition. The next small thing is to think small thoughts. And this is a mental practice of imagining things you need to do in small steps. You'll have heard of the fake it till you make it. That's okay in theory, but it's a bit often pretty terrifying in reality, especially if it's quite a big thing you're trying to change. And instead, Robert Morris suggests using something called mind sculpture, which apparently builds on something called guided imagery, which is where you visualize yourself on a screen performing the steps of a task. We've spoken about this in past episodes where you can actually practice, especially with things like sports and athletes and things. It's actually been proved, hasn't it, with studies that they can enhance their performance by doing these guided imagery. Mind sculpture apparently is just a step further taking that guided imagery, but it's more engaged and you imagine the sensations that you feel doing these steps. So all the senses that you feel, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you feeling? And again, and this happens with all the steps, what is key is little and often. So he suggests spending a small amount of time, like 30 seconds maybe every day, taking a small step towards your goal and really imagine the sensation. So this is just spending time, this small amount of time, 30 seconds, imagining the steps. And the idea is that you slowly build and slowly. So you might spend a month doing this 30-second exercise every day. And then it might become that you're imagining for a little bit longer and you gradually work up to taking these steps in reality. That's where we get onto the next one, which really is what Kaizen is all about. Take small actions. And this is what he says about it. Small actions are at the heart of Kaizen. By taking steps so tiny that they seem trivial or even laughable, you'll sail calmly past obstacles that have defeated you before. Slowly but painlessly, you'll cultivate an appetite for continued success and lay down a permanent new route to change. And he has some examples of this. So your goal might be to stop overspending. Big goal. A suggested Kaizen action: remove one object from the shopping cart before heading to the cash register. Begin an exercise program. Stand, yes, just stand on the treadmill for a few minutes every morning. Manage stress once a day. Note where your body is holding tension, your neck, your back, whatever. Then take one deep breath. Keep the house clean. Pick an area of the house, set a timer for 5 minutes and tidy up. You must stop when the timer goes off. And so on. He has some other suggestions. Learn a foreign language. Commit to learning one new word every day. If that's too hard, he says, one new word each week. And this is a theme that comes up. If you find that the small action that you've chosen seems too much, make it even smaller. So these small actions trick the brain into thinking the change is no big deal. It's too small to be significant and worthy of getting stressed about. There's very little risk of failure or disappointment or unhappiness as a result. Again, you're coming back to this sneaking around that stress response of fight or flight. And at the same time, you're building new habits at what might actually turn out to be quite a fast pace. And he talks about flossing one tooth at a time. We've heard this mentioned. I think it's the example that gets brought up by just about everyone who talks about this subject, that your goal might be to start flossing your teeth. And that seems overwhelming. So you set yourself the target of just flossing one tooth a day. And before you know it, while you're standing there, you might as well floss two or three and then doing the whole lot. But a couple of points on that, and it's an easy example to follow through. If you tend to forget whatever this new small step is that you've committed to, put a trigger reminder somewhere, and somewhere with a habit that already exists so that you're not going to forget it. And using the flossing example, he has suggested to people to tie a bit of dental floss around the TV remote. So if you've forgotten it, at some point you're going to use that TV remote, unless you don't watch television, in which case choose something else, and it's going to remind you. So there's going to be no way you're going to forget this small commitment every day. And then another thing that he talks about is that's actually a good trick as well for stacking new habits. If you're trying to create a new habit, stack it on one that you're already doing that you don't even think about. And I think Rangan Chatterjee talks about this. He talks about maybe doing however many squats you can do while the kettle is boiling to make your cup of coffee in the morning. So instead of just standing there waiting for the kettle to boil, you can bring in a new habit, but in a small amount of time that otherwise probably would be wasted. And that's the main crux of it, really. But there are a few more chapters that have some other things that are worth adding. Solve small problems. We get really used to living with minor annoyances. But the idea of the solve small problems chapter is to learn to spot and solve small problems, because that means you can often avoid them becoming big and overwhelming problems that are way, way harder to deal with. And a couple of exercises he suggests to get your mind thinking about these things is thinking about a big mistake you've made in your life, and then tracking back and thinking about considering what small signs earlier on there were that you could have stepped in and course corrected. Another thing you can do is think about a small mistake you've made today. What's important is you don't think about it with blame or shame, but in a curious sense of how you might have avoided it or course corrected. And what he's getting at is just to be mindful about signals that things are going a bit awry and plan around them. And this is where strategies come in. And I think it's something that we both come across in the areas we work in with people trying to solve issues around their diet and their lifestyle, where it's quite important often to try and figure out the early stages of where things go wrong, because that's where you put the strategies in. You course correct when it's fairly easy to do so, rather than waiting until the problem gets really big, because when the problem gets really big, you feel like the solution has to be big. And the whole point of Kaizen is small steps. Mm-hmm. So the looking at the small problems, is the idea is to get in when the problems are small so that you can solve them then. Bestow small rewards. This one's quite interesting. It's looking at the theory of the size of reward and intrinsic motivation. And apparently, larger does not equal better. You kind of logically, you'd think it would. The example he gives are in organizations and in industry, but it does make sense when you think about it. Large financial incentives, for example, encourage you to focus only on big and grand ideas that are worthy of such a reward. And they're actually really quite hard for most of us to come up with. Whereas small rewards encourage internal motivation because they're more about recognition than material gain. They're a token of gratitude and they involve thought. So the idea here is whether you're thinking about trying to motivate somebody else or you're trying to motivate yourself, think of a small reward that's appropriate to the goal you're trying to achieve, but also the person who you're trying to motivate, be that yourself or somebody else. So actually you're putting thought into it, and think of that token of gratitude. It involves thought. It's a bit like when when you get a present that it hasn't cost much money, but somebody's put a lot of thought into it. That's much more meaningful. I think the sense I get from it is that's the same kind of thinking is going in behind that, that basically recognition is more important to us intrinsically, mm-hmm. as far as motivation goes, than material gain. And the last one, identify small moments. Kaizen overall encourages a slower pace and an appreciation of smaller moments, and really just about being mindful and aware of the little things. Kind of that phrase, stopping to smell the roses and really appreciate the scent. But also being curious about the little things around you, the seemingly unimportant things, and being open and curious to maybe what opportunities they might lead to. I'm going to leave you with one of the examples in the book, and he's got quite a few. But this one tickled me, I guess, being a dog owner. But the example is a Swiss engineer called Georges de Mestral. I guess that's probably should be pronounced Georges de Mestral. Was walking his dog one day and noticed a load of burrs sticking to the dog's fur, as well as to his own clothes. Very annoying, that's probably happened to you. But Georges, instead of being irritated by them, he was intrigued, and his attention to the details of what was going on here and his curiosity led him to invent Velcro. So the motto of that story is just to be aware of the little things, but to be open and curious. So there you have it. I've kind of raced through various different Kaizen small steps. I wanted to sort of try and touch on everything that was in the book to give you some ideas.
So Daisy, I'm curious, after having read this book before and reviewing it now, can you give maybe an example of how you've been able to apply some of these strategies in working on things that you work on?
I knew you were going to ask me that. And I'll be honest with you, I think this is where things like my rebel and questioner tendency probably come in and rebel against the idea of any kind of small steps towards making any kind of change. Well, of course, I can give you one example, and that's one I've mentioned already. I'm sitting here racking my brains trying to come up with some good examples. But of course, my gratitude journaling is a good example of small steps that I did commit to every day that had actually a big and lasting impact in a relatively short period of time. Because this is one of the things he discusses, and he actually gives some good examples in usually work settings. Actually, most of this comes from organizations and work settings, but he does give more personal examples as well. Okay, so if we work back from the other way and look at it as a big picture thing, if I'd have said to you, and I didn't know this would be the end result, but looking back, if I'd have said, okay, my goal is to go from being a bit of a glass half empty kind of person who tends to look a bit too much at the negative in a situation, I want to be more of an optimistic, glass half full type person whose natural tendency is to look at the positive in a situation. That actually feels like quite a big task to complete, a bit overwhelming. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to spend a minute every day writing down three things that you're grateful for that day. And they can be anything you like. They can be as small as you like. They can be, and we've discussed this before, obviously, but they can be like, for me, when I struggle to find things, I could always write down that my dogs had made me smile, or I had a nice cuddle with my dog. So I always had at least one that I could write down, even if I couldn't make three. But by the end of just one short month, 30 days, I had pretty much forever. I'm not saying I'm the most optimistic person on the planet or that I always look at the positive, but I did see a fundamental shift in my way of thinking, in my approach, in the way that I would look at any kind of situation, and the way I would look at people, relationships with people, all sorts of aspects of life. And so I actually achieved that. If you'd have told me at the beginning, I'd have kind of become a different person in just a month, I'd have probably said that was impossible. But there you go, I did it.
And like you said, if you had been instructed, okay, starting now, I want you to think like this, that would have been too overwhelming, too big of a shift.
Mm.
But to focus on shifting that in small steps over a month's period of time, a ton of shifting could happen.
And I think that's maybe actually is the crux of it, is finding what the step is. And that's where we've talked about how these things often can, they seem very inspiring when you're reading them and they sound very easy when you're reading them. But when you actually have to put them into practice, they can be a bit difficult. And you put me on the spot there and you asked me a question and I did struggle to come up with some examples. But there you go. I gave you one that was actually created quite a big shift in my life. But I am thinking now about, you know, all the things I do want to change and how I struggle for whatever reason, whether it be, whether I put it down to my rebel tendency, which is my typical excuse, but whatever it is. And I think the difficult part of this process is finding what that small step is for you that's going to work for you. And that's, you know, that's maybe the difficult thing and maybe need some small steps to get to that point.
I also like the things you described today in describing kind of the different chapters. In that, even if it's not just on this one bigger goal that you're working on and the little steps you'll take, but on anything, imagining it in smaller steps, any task that seems challenging, doing the mind sculpture thing that you talked about. So again, not only a big change that we want to make or habit we want to create, but any task that we're facing, by breaking it down into small steps. I love the idea of solving small problems because then they don't become big problems. And if you think about it, you know, like if you had to carry a bucket of little stones, every time you put a stone in there, eventually it gets really heavy. But if you're taking little stones out as you're adding new ones, it never gets too out of balance. And I think that's letting small problems add up becomes amotivational. It makes it very hard to make progress when we're too overwhelmed. So I love that concept as well.
Something I was thinking of when I was looking again at the chapter about asking small questions, especially because that's something that has created quite a big change for me. But it made me think a little bit about Jim Quick with his different reading techniques, his speed reading techniques. But one of the things he talks about with when he talks more about both the speed and the comprehension is asking questions. So you ask questions before you read. And actually, it was after seeing him speak about that, that I started studying in a different way. Instead of going about it the typical way that I was brought up doing, where you had to learn all the information first, and only then were you given the exam questions and you were tested on the information that you had retained. It's actually a much more sensible way to do it, is to get the exam questions first, then look at the information, because your brain starts working, it starts ticking over, trying to solve those questions. And I think that's something that can have, again, if you're thinking about making a change to some kind of habit and it's just seeming too much and you can't figure out what kind of step to take, maybe sidestep that and do something different. I think this is a really good way in to make quite a change. And if you're wondering what sort of small question, don't even worry about that. Make it something silly. He uses an example in the book where he says, imagine if you asked your colleague at work, and not a very good example in our current COVID environment, but imagine asking your colleague at work, what color was the car you parked next to this morning? And they probably wouldn't be able to tell you. But if you kept asking them every day, What they would find is, as they drove into their parking space, they would be reminded of that question you asked them, and they would look and they would see what color it is so that they could tell you. And the point is that you just start turning the cogs in your brain. You just start training it to think a certain way that could then have a knock-on effect on other things.
I also think that's important in so many people that I listen to and follow touch on that in some way. But when we focus on a problem, our focus is just on the problem, and often it's harder to see the solutions. But those little questions get your brain out of that kind of locked position and get it more in a generating position. So it can start to generate solutions and generate awareness to create solutions rather than, you know, just really intensely focusing on what the problem is. So I like that. As I said, it just kind of ties in with a lot of people that I follow and what they teach as well.
So in a lot of ways, that's just a whole lot more teasers to try and get you to potentially read the book in more detail. But hopefully there are some things there to give you some ideas for some small steps that you can take in your life.
And interestingly, as we've talked about this last time when we recorded this, and today as we're recording for this episode, you and I have discussed the similarity between this book and others that have come since. And, you know, always the curiosity of, did someone learn something from this book that spurred them to do this research or to come up with this philosophy or write this book or whatever? But, you know, anyone who has listened to me talk about books lately know two of the books that I talk about a lot are Tiny Habits by B.J. Fogg and Atomic Habits by James Clear. And, you know, I don't always think it's a bad thing when we find resources that overlap because there's so much value in each one just tweaks it enough that it might, this part of it coming from this author might be what sparks you to do more with it. And this part coming from a different author might be what sparks me to do more with it. So
that's right.
I like that there's actually some overlap with these authors.
And they all bring something new to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I've forgotten the name of the book that he discusses, his little, he puts them into 5-minute chunks, but Rangan Chatterjee has a similar book that approaches, it's this same philosophy that keeps getting repeated, but each time, like you say, there's overlap, but everyone brings something new to it. And we all resonate with different people, don't we? So you could hear the same thing from 10 different people, and it'll just be one of those that really resonates with you and one that gets it. Well, you might have heard it for the first 9 and it will be the 10th person who says it because they say it in a slightly different way. That's the one that clicks with you. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Daisy, I'm glad that you have now shared this book more in its entirety. And again, I am even more convinced that this would be a good book for me to read because I like this type of book, and just to hear the different take on these things, I think would be really useful. So thank you for sharing it.
You're welcome. And thank you for putting me on the spot. I wasn't expecting that.
And I hope everyone has a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a great week.